It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Coronavirus concern.
I'm as worried about this as I've ever been.
That is our top story at noon. With the spread of the virus growing by the day, along with the death toll, the World Health Organization now poised to declare the coronavirus a global emergency. Texas Congressman and former physician Michael Burgess.
The year I came here, SARS was the thing. We went through two different versions of the bird flu, the swine flu, Ebola, and Zika. But this one actually concerns me more than any of those.
Today, the White House appointed a coronavirus task force to monitor infection rates in the U.S. The virus has claimed at least 170 lives in China, where it originated. Today, Russia closed 2,500 miles of its border with China. Reporter Alec Loon is in Moscow.
Really, the reason this decision has been taken by the government, I think, is because it's more of an economic decision. Although, of course, in Russia, all decisions are seen as being at least tacitly approved by Putin.
U.S. officials, meantime, planning more evacuations for Americans living in Wuhan, China, the epicenter for the virus. Health officials say the pneumonia-like illness has sickened some folks who've never even been to China, and that has them concerned. Another day of Q&A. That is the other big story at noon. The question and answer session at the Senate impeachment trial of President Trump will wrap up today after more than 9 hours of back and forth debate yesterday.
Senator from Alaska.
And there was no quid pro quo.
That results in impeachment.
Last night, President Trump claiming victory, tweeting the phrase "game over" after an old video of his former National Security Advisor John Bolton surfaced in that interview with Radio Free Europe last August. Bolton seemed to contradict statements he's alleged to have made in his upcoming book about that infamous phone call between President Trump and the leader of Ukraine. Here's what Bolton said. Back in August,
the president called to congratulate President Zelensky on his election and then on his success in the parliamentary election. They were very warm and cordial calls.
But those are not the claims in Bolton's new book, which hit store shelves in March. The former NSA chief was at the center of the fight to call new witnesses at the impeachment trial. Momentum to do that, though, is now waning.
I think it's unlikely we're going to have witnesses because I think the Senate is waking up to the fact that they've been set up by the House.
Mark Thiessen at the Washington Post says this trial could be over tomorrow. Today, senators will once again submit their questions in writing to be read aloud by Chief Justice John Roberts. It's going to be the final day for that. The full Senate could vote on Friday on whether or not to call new witnesses if new witnesses are not called. The president could be acquitted before Super Bowl Sunday. The first nominating contest in the 2020 race for the White House will take place next week. It is the Iowa caucuses.
Democracy begins in Iowa.
That's former Vice President Joe Biden and Mayor Pete Buttigieg, the only candidates getting some face time with the voters in the Hawkeye State. The impeachment trial has forced the other Democratic White House hopefuls to stay in Washington.
And I'm meeting lots of what I like to call future former Republicans.
Buttigieg says he hopes to carve out for himself a new block of supporters in Iowa. As for the senators stuck in Washington, they now have a choice to make. Vote to hear from additional witnesses and risk being off the campaign trail even more, or end it and get back on the stump.
I took an oath and I will be there as long as that trial needs me.
Would I rather be campaigning in Iowa in the last week? I would.
Bernie Sanders now relying on thousands of volunteers to be his eyes and ears in Iowa, while Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar sneaking away during breaks in the impeachment trial. Well, there are still a lot of questions that need answering in the helicopter crash that killed NBA superstar Kobe Bryant and 8 others. Most of the chopper has now been removed from the crash site near Los Angeles. That's where we find correspondent Steve Futterman.
Interviews are also being conducted. Among those being interviewed, people who worked with and knew the pilot. Many questions still focus on why the pilot chose to continue flying in heavy fog, Those who knew him called him experienced and cautious.
Steve Futterman reporting, and for the first time since the tragedy, the wife of Kobe Bryant, now speaking publicly, Vanessa Bryant, says her family is completely devastated by the sudden loss of her husband and 13-year-old daughter. Bryant says she's forming a foundation to help support the families of the other victims involved in that horrific crash. For the first time in 4 years, life expectancy in these United States has gone up. The opioid epidemic had sent numbers on a downward spiral. Robert Anderson is at the CDC.
Drug overdose deaths declined slightly from 2017 to 2018 by 4.6%. That's the first decline that we've seen in the number of drug overdose deaths in 28 years.
Cancer deaths also down, but there was an increase in suicide and deaths from the flu. Still to come this Thursday, a new stadium for the Buffalo Bills, Greek life suspended at Lehigh University, and the best city in America for football.
Good afternoon to all. Nice to see the sun today, but clouds are gathering now, and we'll see those clouds dominate into the weekend. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll look for you in 10 minutes.
Alrighty, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Thursday, January 30th. Well, the ballot for that special election in Western New York is nearly set. State Senator Chris Jacobs is the endorsed Republican candidate in the 27th congressional race. Former Grand Island Supervisor Nate McMurray will be the Democratic candidate by the end of tonight. As for the Conservative Party candidate,
we will have a Conservative candidate in the primary.
That's Conservative Party Chairman Ralph Lurigo.
There will be a special election on April 28th, followed 6 weeks later on June 23rd by a primary. And so far what the Conservatives have decided is that there are at least four good candidates in this race.
Lurigo says he fully expects Chris Jacobs to win the special election in Western New York. The 27th congressional seat has been vacant since the resignation of Republican Chris Collins in September. Well, could the Buffalo Bills be getting a new stadium? NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell hinted at that during his press conference yesterday in Miami ahead of Super Bowl 54.
A stadium that is going to be competitive with other stadiums around the league is going to be important in that context. And I think everyone's committed to that, whether it's a new significant renovation or whether it's a completely new facility in a new location.
Goodell says for the Bills to stay in Buffalo, a new stadium or a major renovation to the existing one has to be in the offering.
I'm hoping that it will continue, and I expect that it will continue to be a collaborative process between the public sector and obviously the Bills. We all want the Buffalo Bills to continue to be in Buffalo to be successful.
The New Era Field in Orchard Park, New York, underwent major renovations back in 2013. That was right before the Pegulas took over the Bills. The team's lease is set to run out in 3 years. Lehigh University out of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, has suspended all Greek life amid reports of hazing and excessive drinking on campus. School officials say they're investigating at least 7 incidents over the past few weeks. The university says no events will be taking place during the suspension and no new members will be recruited until further notice. There is a new push to lower New York State's legal blood alcohol limit for drinking and driving from 0.08 to 0.05.
Common sense, unfortunately, is not as common as we would like it to be. There's no excuse for having too many drinks and then getting behind the wheel.
State Senator John Liu says it's not asking too much to lower the limit.
We're not trying to be Puritans here. It's still okay to have a drink or two.
This is the fourth time lawmakers in Albany have tried to lower the legal limit. Right now, Utah, the only state in the country with a legal blood alcohol limit of 0.05. A new study by AAA shows an uptick in automobile accidents in states that have legalized marijuana. In Washington state, for instance, there's been a 10% jump in fatal accidents since the drug was decriminalized. Most police groups oppose the legalization of marijuana because of the risk it poses to the motoring public. New York State lawmakers are marking the one-year anniversary of the Child Victims Act by calling for an extension of the look-back window. Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
The civil look-back window allows survivors to sue their abuser or any institution that helped to cover up the offense, regardless of how long ago the act occurred. More than 1,400 lawsuits have already been filed since the window opened last summer in New York State, but legislators want to grant victims more time. The Child Victims Act changed the law to allow abuse victims to seek criminal prosecution against an abuser until the age of 28 or until they are 55 in civil cases. Advocates have called on the state to enact a Child Victim Compensation Fund to help those whose abusers were not part of a major institution. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. The Super Bowl isn't just America's most watched sporting event. It's also prime time for those who dabble in human trafficking.
Traffickers know that they can make a ton of money by going to the Super Bowl, and so that's what they do.
Deb Keener runs the Potter's Hands Foundation in Corning, New York. It's a not-for-profit that helps rescue women trapped in the ugly world of trafficking. She says most trafficking transactions take place online.
There's also the dark web where a lot of this stuff takes place. You know, it's just a hidden crime, but these guys are masterminds and they just know how to do it.
Keener says human trafficking isn't just a big city problem either.
It happens in every small town, every big city. I often ask people if you ever see anything on the news about heroin or meth. If you have drugs in your community, you have trafficking.
In fact, Deb Keener says most cases of human trafficking starts with a drug problem.
Traffickers know if they can lure you in with a drug or you're already addicted, they know they've got you.
So with its vast system of roads and highways, Pennsylvania's human trafficking rate, one of the highest in the nation. Earlier this month, lawmakers in Harrisburg passed legislation to crack down on human trafficking. Time to get the lead out. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf now targeting lead and asbestos contamination all across the Commonwealth.
It's unfortunate that Pennsylvania's rapid growth took place during a time when lead and asbestos were widely used. But we have the chance to correct the past and to build a brighter future for all of us.
The governor wants to spend over $1 billion to clean up the toxins all across the Keystone State. State Senator Vincent Hughes says it's money well spent.
Too many Pennsylvanians live their lives in toxic homes, send their babies to toxic daycare facilities, and allow their children to attend toxic schools.
The lead and asbestos cleanup plan will be part of Governor Tom Wolf's budget proposal. He'll take the wraps off the spending plan next week. Voters in Pennsylvania could head to the polls a little sooner than usual in the next presidential election. Family Life's Bob Price.
Yeah, when it comes time to vote in the 2024 presidential primary, Pennsylvania may be voting sooner. The state Senate unanimously approved a bill Wednesday that would move Pennsylvania's presidential primary to the third Tuesday of March. Currently, the primary is held on the fourth Tuesday in April. Sponsors say this way, Pennsylvania voters get more of a say on who the nominees are for each respective party. Now, this rule change can't take effect until 2024. The 2020 Pennsylvania primary will remain in April. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Okay, Bob, as we all get ready for the big game on Sunday, Wallet Hub is out with its annual ranking of the best football cities in all of America, and some local communities making the cut. Buffalo, New York, one of the best in all of America when it comes to football. The Queen City came in 13th on the list, mainly because of its cheap ticket prices and the Bills Mafia. Yeah, those rowdy fans. The number one football city in America, well, that would be Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Steel City, according to Wallet Hub. Well, the action heating up at the Australian Open. It is sunny time. It's called your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start with the soccer down under.
Sophia Kennan has conquered the room.
of number one.
21-year-old American Sophia Kennan shocking number one overall seed Ashley Barty in straight sets to advance to the finals.
You know, this really wasn't an easy one, but I'm just so grateful and thankful for this moment.
Kennan became the youngest American woman to beat the number one player at any major since Serena beat Venus at Wimbledon in 2002. Kennan will take on Garbiñe Muguruza for the championship. She notched a straight set win over number four Simona Halep. On the men's side, he did it again. Defending champion Novak Djokovic defeated Roger Federer in straight sets to reach the Australian Open final for a record eighth time. He'll take on either number five seed Dominic Thiem or number seven seed Alexander Zverev as he seeks a record-extending eighth Australian Open title. On the ice, Buffalo Sabres lose Linus Ottermark for at least 3 to 4 weeks. That means Carter Hutton will take over. They've also called up Jonas Johansson, who has yet to play in the NHL, but is 13-3-3 with Rochester in the AHL. Ugly at Madison Square Garden. Only 43 seconds left. Memphis leading the Knicks 124-106. Jay Crowder steals the ball, then attempts a three-point shot. Alfred Payton didn't like it and shoved Crowder to the ground. Crowder, Payton, and Marcus Morris all ejected in the Grizzlies' 124-106 win. Morris said he was okay with the steal, but...
No, the steal was cool. You got the steal. It is what it is. But when you step back and shoot a three, you know what I'm saying, and try to, you know, low-key, like, rub it in that they're winning, you know, it's just unprofessional, man.
Knicks fall 127-106. College basketball, Duquesne gave Dayton all they can handle before falling 73-69. Number 24, Penn State crushing Indiana 64-49. St. Bonaventure in overtime beats Fordham 62-55. Binghamton falls to Hartford 73-57. Bucknell loses to Army 68-59. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Appreciate it, Sonny. Still to come on this Thursday edition of the Noon Report, coronavirus concern. We'll have the very latest, plus the impeachment trial of President Trump could soon be over, and love cards for the soldiers in Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
You can't go to the movies these days without encountering some LGBT propaganda. It might not be loud, but that's not what makes it effective. And we can still say no. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Just about every major movie release these days is scrutinized about whether or not it features an obvious LGBT character. Ever since the live-action remake of Beauty and the Beast, and a bit before, Disney's been sprinkling LGBT characters generously across its film properties. Even the most recent installment of Star Wars, now owned by Disney, features the franchise's first, albeit strangely placed and obviously forced, same-sex kiss. And Marvel Studios, also owned by, you guessed it, Disney, has joined the cause, including a gay character in its upcoming movie, The Eternals. The studio also recently announced a new film currently in production that will feature its first ever transgender superhero, marking what will likely become an endless parade of token T's following in the wake of the L's and G's. Token is the right word for what we're seeing here. What most stands out about all these characters is just how tacked on they feel. Few are essential to the stories being told. In some cases, they even detract or at least distract from them. Disney and other studios aren't making movies about LGBT identity or lifestyle. They're capitulating to character quotas, virtue signaling to the loud and influential lobby in order to keep protests down and ticket sales up. In no way here am I suggesting that we shouldn't expect more overt LGBT stories in the future. We certainly can. But in the meantime, the reality is that even a woke entertainment titan like Disney is not so much pushing a cultural agenda as they're bowing to it. Nor am I suggesting that their obvious capitulation to these imposed character quotas is ineffective sexual propaganda. As Brett Kunkel and I say in our book, A Practical Guide to Culture, ideas are often most powerful not where they're the loudest, but where they're made to just appear normal. Since the TV show Will and Grace, the most commonly advanced message has been that gay people are just like everyone else and just want to live in love and peace. And from there, the demands have only grown, from cultural power to legal power. Though many in the GNL camp were satisfied with living and loving in peace, the movement itself was far more ambitious, first demanding affirmation, then conformity and even participation from charities, public employees, bakers, florists, schools, and t-shirt makers. And now, transgender characters are being introduced into big budget films as characters who just want to live in peace. The question is, will it also make the transition to legal power? Well, the strange tale of J.K. Rowling leaves some doubts. In early December, the multi-billionaire author of Harry Potter tweeted her support for a researcher in the UK who was fired from her job for saying that male and female are biological realities. When a judge at an employment tribunal upheld her firing, calling the researcher's views transphobic and unworthy of a democratic society, Rowling tweeted that while she supports loving whichever consenting adult you choose, firing this researcher for insisting that women are real was just a bridge too far for her. Despite the intense backlash and the call for boycotts, Rowling still hasn't retracted her tweet. As Rodrere points out, all of this raises an interesting question. If all the soft power in that movement can't move Rowling, can't other entertainers say no too? Maybe the claims of the transgender movement are just too radical. Maybe the T fails culturally where the L and the G largely succeeded. Well, we'll find out soon enough. Until then, token transgender characters at the movies are an ironic reminder that this is a movement still trying to gain acceptance, which means there's still time for dissenting voices, even very influential ones, to say no. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour. Let's head outside. The weekend almost here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. On this date last year, rip-roaring snow squalls were burying portions of western and central New York while everybody was dealing with barbaric and excruciating low temperatures and wind chills. But we'll have none of that now. Our weather pattern remains tranquil, moderate, and no big weather issues are foreseen in the immediate future. For this afternoon, though, we'll see more in the way of cloud cover emerge, with temperatures peaking in the low to mid-30s. Rather cloudy tonight and tomorrow. We're in the 20s tonight, 30s tomorrow. There could be a couple of flurries and sprinkles in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania tomorrow afternoon. On Saturday, rather cloudy, couple of flurries and sprinkles around with high temps, 30s and low 40s. A comparable weather story for Sunday as well.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Thursday, January 30th. The World Health Organization poised to declare the coronavirus a global emergency. That could happen today. The pneumonia-like illness has claimed nearly 200 lives, sickened 8,000 more. Some of the infected have never even been to China, where the coronavirus originated from. Texas Congressman and former physician Michael Burgess.
I'm as worried about this as I've ever been. The year I came here, SARS was the thing. We went through two different versions of the bird flu, the swine flu, Ebola, and Zika. But this one actually concerns me more than any of those.
And today, the White House appointed a coronavirus task force to monitor infection rates in the U.S. There are now coronavirus cases in 18 countries. The impeachment trial of President Trump could be coming to an end very soon. It appears Republicans now have the votes to refuse more witnesses. That means an acquittal in the Senate could come as soon as tomorrow.
Adam Schiff lied to millions of Americans who are tuning in, saying that there was no coordination with the whistleblower. We know that there is coordination between Adam Schiff, his staff, and the whistleblower before the whistleblower complaint was even issued.
New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik says the credibility of the lead prosecutor here is under question. Republicans need 51 votes to shut down Democratic calls for more witnesses. A vote on those witnesses expected tomorrow. U.S. officials have now discovered the longest drug smuggling tunnel ever. It's on the border with Mexico. That tunnel was 3/4 of a mile long. It was complete with a rail track, electric cables, air vents, even had an elevator. John Callery is with the DEA.
The tunnel discovery is another drastic reminder of how serious the drug problem is and how the cartels will take risks and expend endless amounts of money to get deadly drugs like fentanyl and methamphetamine into the United States.
The 5.5-foot-high, 2-foot-wide tunnel was discovered nearly 70 feet below ground between Tijuana and San Diego. For the first time in 4 years, life expectancy in the U.S. is up. The CDC's Robert Anderson on the news for men.
Life expectancy in the United States increased from 78.6 to 78.7 years, and that was primarily due to decline in drug overdose deaths, declines in cancer deaths.
For women, life expectancy rose to 81 years in 1 month. Coming up on 24 minutes past the hour, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, John Lomparis with the Institute on Religion and Democracy. This May, United Methodist Church delegates from around the globe will gather and vote on whether or not to split the denomination in favor of LGBTQ weddings. Today, we continue the conversation. The people coming up with the likely plan to divide the denomination would require a 57% vote for the conservative view on marriage, while those hailing LGBTQ ceremonies would need just 44% of the vote. John, would you give us some details about the group working on this protocol of reconciliation and grace through separation?
With increasing talk of the denomination splitting, Bishop John Yambasu of Sierra Leone called this group together to see a way forward where it's not just continued bitter fighting of each other. And there were a couple representatives of unofficial evangelical caucuses based within the United States that were there. But then there were also representatives of, number one, liberal unofficial caucuses, number two, representatives of our bishops, and number three, people that were there supposedly to represent United Methodists outside of the United States. And I'm not aware of any people in the other three groups that would be on the side of the U.S. evangelical caucuses in terms of being defenders of traditional biblical values. So it was not representative of where the people in the pews are, but they had a series of meetings that were moderated by a prominent professional mediator named Kenneth Feinberg. The thinking was that as a liberal Jewish guy, he did not have a dog in the fight of a liberal Protestant denomination's internal doctrinal debates, so there was a degree to which he could be trusted to be fair.
John, under this plan, what would happen as far as the name and the church buildings?
The terms are still being negotiated. I would hope that in terms of the name and the logo of the church, that there could be some continued use where both sides could say that it's not the conservatives leaving, but it's one part of the United Methodist Church that is continuing different. Conservatives are much more willing to make sacrifices of things like money and property for the sake of peace and the sake of moving forward in ministry. And we've seen in this deal, all of the denominations properties like the United Methodist building in Washington, D.C. would be taken over by the liberal new denomination. And of the denomination's assets, there would be a minority share, $25 million, that would go with the conservative denomination. But in terms of local church properties, every local church would get to keep its property with whichever denomination it ended up in.
Homosexuality, John, has been a contentious battle in the church universal for years. Have we Christians fallen behind on addressing homosexuality from the Bible?
Yes, the Bible could be hardly more clear that homosexual practice is immoral. We do need to acknowledge, I think, that we Bible-believing evangelical Christians have sometimes failed to be compassionate to those in our churches and families who have found themselves, through no choice of their own, struggling with their own sexuality or sexual identity. When we focus too exclusively on homosexuality, our friends who self-identify as LGBTQ can feel like they're being unfairly singled out. The fact is, we have lots of other problems that we need to be talking about, not instead of, but as a both and. In terms of very widespread internet pornography, that's an issue for probably a much greater number of people, and also widespread acceptance, even in the church to some degree, of cohabitation. I just saw a recent prominent survey reporting that of adults that researchers identified as quote-unquote fundamentalist Christians, only 37% said that sex outside of marriage was always wrong, while 41% said it was not wrong at all.
I feel like there's this struggle in our culture where everyone wants to kind of be God themselves, not recognizing that God has our best at heart. And that's why he gave us these boundaries for our own well-being.
In some ways, it goes back to our first parents. Mm-hmm. God sent some boundaries that were there for their own good, but then they heard, did God really say that? Well, let's give a try to this forbidden fruit. Maybe we think we can figure out a way to do things better than the boundaries God set out for us, and that didn't work out so well for them.
John, you're one of the delegates that will get to vote in May. Is there anything that people in the United Methodist Church can do right now?
Yes, please pray for us. People are looking for updates about developments. Please go to our website, www.theird.org. We urge people to pray for a fair and faithful resolution to this. If they have concerns about this plan, and particularly about some of the just blatant unfairness to more traditional believers, they should find out who the delegates are from their region and share their concerns with their delegates and their bishop.
That's John Lomparis at the Institute on Religion and Democracy. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Thank you, Tracy. Faith Under Fire comes your way every Thursday during the Noon Report. You can also find it online anytime at fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. On this date last year, rip-roaring snow squalls were burying portions of western and central New York, while everybody was dealing with barbaric and excruciating low temperatures and wind chills. But we'll have none of that now. Our weather pattern remains tranquil, moderate, and no big weather issues are foreseen in the immediate future. For this afternoon, though, we'll see more in the way of cloud cover emerge, with temperatures peaking in the low to mid-30s. Rather cloudy tonight and tomorrow. We're in the 20s tonight, 30s tomorrow. There could be a couple of flurries and sprinkles in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania tomorrow afternoon. On Saturday, rather cloudy, couple of flurries and sprinkles around with high temps, 30s and low 40s. A comparable weather story for Sunday as well.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Finally at noon, third graders at a Williamsport area elementary school making Valentine's Day cards for active duty soldiers and veterans who have roots in Lycoming County. Here's their teacher, Lisa Lynch.
Valentine's Day is the holiday for love, so I was just thinking that we love our military, so it would be fun to make cards for them and tell them that.
Elena Gerton is a third grader at that school. She says it's important to honor those who've sacrificed so much.
We're thinking about them, and we're happy that they're doing this work for us, because they're spending their time away from their family just for us.
Several of the students in the third grade class at the Hepburn Lycoming Primary School have family members in the military. That school expects to ship out hundreds of Valentines to the troops in all five branches of the U.S. military. That is the world we live in this Thursday, as always. Thanks for joining us. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.